Good morning. Happy Mother's Day. It is 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning, May 12th, 2024. I'm Susie Jones. That's Charlie Weiss. Morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Susie.
Did you call your mother? Not right yet.
Not yet, no. going out there tonight.
Good. Yep. Okay. Flowers? What's the general protocol for?
I'll get a card.
Yeah? No flowers?
She's a card person.
More than flowers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much so.
Well, we want to start out by saying happy Mother's Day to everyone out there who is a mother or a grandmother who provides motherly care. You're all in it today. We're all celebrating you today. Thousands of women are out walking today for the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Race for the Cure 2024. A lot going on in this world in terms of the work around breast cancer. And so being that it is Mother's Day, we have invited Dr. Miriam Robbie. She is with Hennepin Healthcare, and we're talking about breast cancer and screening and what age you should screen and who is at risk, all these questions. And right out of the gates, I want to say happy Mother's Day to everyone listening, and I want to invite you to text us or call us at 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. Dr. Robbie, thank you for being on with us today. We really appreciate it.
Good morning. Thank you, Susie and Charlie. I appreciate the invite.
Wonderful. We like having you. And it's a big day for mothers and mothers and women in general needing to care about breast cancer, among other cancers. Talk about how things have changed. Where are we with screening? Is it younger, older? Who should get screened?
Agreed. If I could, I'd like to echo your sentiments to all of the mothers out there. Happy Mother's Day. And shout out to those who are walking in the breast cancer walk today. It's very important to highlight that. But getting back to your question, right now the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends that we initiate screening mammography for all women at least age 40 years, and you should have that yearly up to every 2 years, but that is designated with you and your primary care provider.
And it had been higher than that, had it not?
It had, yes. It was started at 50, but what they had done, you know, was looked at a lot of different research, and what they had noted was that among all U.S. women, breast cancer is the second most common cancer and the second most common cause of cancer death. And with that, that's where they elected to adjust that.
And do you know what the first most is? I think it's lung cancer, isn't it?
Very good. It is lung cancer. Lung cancer is number one, but breast cancer is right behind that. And what they have noted with the metrics is that non-Hispanic white women have the highest incidence of breast cancer, but black women have the highest mortality rate.
Oh, and that's... Is that just generally access to health care, or kind of talk about what those barriers are for non-white women?
Yes, exactly, Susie. It's the deliberate focus, not only with Hennepin Healthcare in aligning with the USPSTF's guideline, is to focus on health equity and the social determinants health, which has noted that different environmental stressors, stressors with not receiving proper care at certain times, maybe having mammograms and screening at late stages are some of the factors that has led to that.
So how do you solve that problem?
Great question. Yesterday, we at Hennepin Healthcare sponsored an event with D. Jones Entertainment, the pre-Mother's Day event. It was an innovative way that we outreach to the community. And in that outreach, we utilized churches such as Grace Apostolic with Bishop David Johnson and Tisa Johnson in health and wellness outreach. We made sure to grassroots level have conversations with our community members to get out. And in that, what we ended up doing, we had a Richfield open house clinic in which we opened our mammography breast screening, and we were able to get in 3 hours 12 women screened and also set up 4 future appointments. And that was just in 3 hours with that outreach.
Is that something you'd do again? Was that hard to put together? And could you or would you do that again?
Great question, Susie.
I don't know. Yeah. It seems like if it worked, why wouldn't you take it around the neighborhoods?
I love it. I love it. I love the question. Yes to your question, was it hard? Yes, it was hard. However, with the numbers that we were talking, the statistics, the metrics, what is truly hard? Is it hard to see someone die young because we didn't outreach properly? Or is it hard just to try to get something together that was fun, but also screening at the same time? So to me, to answer your second question, yes, my CEO, Jennifer DePiculis, was there. Also, my executive leader, Wendy Stulock, was there. And in that, they were able to see this innovative way that we could potentially do annually, if even more, so that we could continue to outreach to our communities.
Very good. It is 7:15, just about 7:16 on a Sunday morning on Mother's Day. I'm Susie Jones. Happy to have you with us. If you're listening, we are talking to Dr. Miriam Robbie with Hennepin Healthcare about breast cancer on this Mother's Day weekend. This is Mother's Day. And we'd like you to be a part of the show as well. If you're going through something right now and you want to share or you have a question, I have so many friends in my life, Dr. Robbie, right now that have had breast cancer or are going through it in some capacity. And a lot of changes have happened in terms of treatment. So 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. We're back right after this. And we are back. It is 20 minutes now past 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. Happy Mother's Day! You're just waking up, go make some coffee, bring it to your mom, your wife, your grandma. Let's watch out for each other. That's our job on this planet, in case you're wondering. Again, I'm Susie Jones, Charlie Weiss at the helm, and our guest on our newsline is Dr. Miriam Robbie with Hennepin Health, and we're talking about breast cancer, and we want you to be a part of this show on this Mother's Day. It's 651-461-9226. Dr. Robbie, let's take a question. This texter writes, both my sister has had breast cancer, so what about what age should my daughter get her first mammogram?
Okay.
She corrects herself. She says, I meant to say both my sister and myself have had breast cancer, so at what age does my daughter get her first mammogram? There you go. Thank you, Charlie.
Great question. And with family history of breast and ovarian cancer, that does place a woman's risk of breast cancer higher with her familial history, and especially being at a first degree relative. With that, you definitely would want to start having discussions with your primary care provider early onset. That would be discussions as far as gene, checking for the, BRCA gene, and also having conversations with further examinations, which one of them would be self-examinations as well. They may elect with your primary care provider to look and start screening, especially with mammography early. We at Hennepin Healthcare, we collaboratively work with guidelines such as the US PTF. And so what I would suggest with her in that, make sure to start having conversations age 20 and keep going, but daily. And that is a collaborative or not daily. I said daily, but not daily.
No, annually.
Annually. We want to do it, but we'd want to do daily breast exams, but annually you want to have that discussion starting at 20, and that it's a collaboration.
Daily self breast exams?
I would do daily. You know, it's easy to do in the shower. You know, the thing when you have a high familial history, and you know, if you can start off doing, it's simple. It takes maybe 30 seconds when you get to the point where, and you're checking, you know, around the areola, you're checking underneath the armpit, you're just checking for any lumps, bumps, things that may be, you know, something that's abnormal, you know, and if it gets to a point where you feel comfortable and want to do weekly, monthly, you can certainly do that.
How often, Dr. Robbie, does a woman find her own breast cancer?
Oh, good question. You know what?
I don't even know if there's a statistic.
Yeah, there's not, as far as I know,
yeah,
the research that has indicated that, and maybe that, Susie, you've highlighted something that we could certainly start looking into.
Well, you know, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you have. Unfortunately, we all have to be involved in our own health care, which, again, unfortunately, a lot of people are not.
That's correct.
Don't pay attention to it. Texter writes, what's the status? You mentioned this a short bit ago about using genetic testing for breast cancer. How does that, is that used or only in special occasions?
That's in high risk for breast cancer. So when you mentioned the previous caller who has that strong familial history, what you want to make sure is that you would have that discussion and see if you'd want to see if you have inherited gene, the BRCA1 or BRCA2 genes that indicate high risk for getting breast cancer. That also may indicate a high risk for ovarian cancer. And in that state, again, that would be something that you would participate with your primary care provider in the next steps as far as in your care.
651-461-9226. That is our phone number. You can call with a question or you can always text. People do like to text. Maybe you yourself are going through a breast cancer experience, or you've already been through a breast cancer experience, or your loved one has, because so many of us know people that have gone through it, whether it's stage one or two or three or four. I just note, Dr. Robbie, how brave these women are that I know that have gone through this, that this getting a cancer diagnosis is terrifying, because I've had lung cancer and I'm better. Thank you. And
yes.
Right now, knock wood. But I just think it takes so much and women need so much support, or we all need support, but in going through this really kind of a scary process.
Yeah, Susie, and, you know, remarkable that you've taken your own testimony and opened this platform to other women and families. You know, men go through it right along with us or other partners, you know, of the, you know, woman as they're doing this. You know, with the event that we did yesterday, what was highlighted in not only the promoter, he himself, his daughter is undergoing treatment. And this is, you know, he's very forward. And so is the daughter with this, undergoing treatment for breast cancer currently. The bishop and First Lady Johnson that I mentioned, Lady Johnson also spoke at the event yesterday, highlighting her stage 4 pancreatic cancer and her that she's going through with that. The individual who serenaded us, Ray Covington, he was undergoing treatment for lymphoma. And so this was a not only a celebration of women and moms and to encourage others to be screened. But it was where we got together as a family and talked about these testimonies, just like you mentioned, Susie, and collaborated in a way where community can get together to not only uplift one another, but also advocate for one another and push each other to get healthy.
651-461-9226 is the talk and text line. This texter writes, I am 71 and I have had clear mammograms every year, but I have dense breasts. How long should I continue to get mammograms?
Great question. And I too have dense breasts, and I also received my mammogram yesterday. To answer your question, what the guidelines shows that you would go to 74 and you would continue to partner with your primary care provider afterwards.
Another question, does breastfeeding lower the risk of breast cancer? Does the risk go down the longer a woman breastfeeds? She says, I have 5 children and I breastfed. She's in her 70s now, and it's been so many years, but I guess just that correlation, is there such?
There is a such correlation. You know, in our reproductive history, breastfeeding does lower risk. You know, if you have your first pregnancy before the age of 30, also lowers that risk. Having that does help. You know, there's some things, though, that may change that course if you had taken hormones of some sort, wasn't physically active, if there was alcohol ingestion and were meaning in excess. And then also, as we highlighted previously, familial history and any genetic mutations that you may have. So it's a careful balance, but to answer your direct question, yes, it does help.
Texter writes, my sister had breast cancer and the treatment, and now she has, I can't quite pronounce it, necrotic brain and liver cancer? Or could this be from alcohol, or can it be from breast treatments? Like, does the treatment cause more harm than the cancer? I think that's a lot of people curious about that. Yeah. Necrotic.
Yep, that's great. Yep, great, Susie. Sorry to hear that, caller. Unfortunately, without having the full history, unsure to really see what was the primary cause of that.
What is necrotic?
So, essentially, necrotic tissue is tissue that's actively dying or has...
Okay.
So, unsure to what that was tied to.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks for calling in, texter. And we're going to take our bottom of the hour break. It is 651-461-9226 if you want to join the conversation today. We'd love to have you. If you're a mother, if you are a grandmother, maybe you have a question for our doctor, Miriam Robbie with Hennepin Healthcare. 651-461-9226. We're back right after this. And we are back with the last half of our health hour. I'm Susie Jones, Charlie Weiss at the helm. Dr. Miriam Robbie, Hennepin Healthcare on our newsline. We're at 651-461-9226. If you have a question, you can call or you can text us and we'll relay the question to the doctor. We'll do a few more text questions, doctor, and then I want to ask a little bit more about treatment and how far we've come in terms of treatment. Let's say, is there any correlation between breast and prostate cancer in the same family, she wonders.
Yes. So, and thank you actually for highlighting that question, because we leave our men out a lot in this. And, you know, there is a correlation. Also, men are at risk for breast cancer as well. They have breast tissue, and it is very important that men get screened just as much as women do. They're not able to do the same type of screening when it comes to prostate. However, they also can, do breast self-exams as far as, you know, checking the tissue for any lumps, bumps, tenderness, or looking for discharge.
Because this texter writes that her daughter just finished radiation and her son is scheduled for prostate surgery. Both are in their 50s. So, like, is the cancer... Is there some genetic connection between the cancers? But I don't know that.
We don't know. Yeah. However, okay. The likelihood could be high. Again, it's okay. The collaboration with your primary care provider, having those history discussions, and potentially looking for that gene.
Sure. Good morning. This texter writes, does menopause have any connection to getting breast cancer? Love the show. She writes, thank you.
Yes, so thank you for that. Menopause can raise the risk for breast cancer, especially if you're taking hormones such as estrogen or progesterone to try to help alleviate some of the symptoms that's correlated with menopause. Also, certain oral contraceptives have also been found to raise the breast cancer risk. So to the caller, yes, there is a correlation with that as well.
The texter writes, if the woman in a man's family have a history of breast cancer, does that increase his odds of getting breast cancer?
It's this, same connection.
Sure.
With the genetic. I strongly suggest this is a strong collaboration with your primary care team. When you have these annual discussions / exams, this is where you have that discussion about your familial history, your mm-hmm. reproductive history, your overall health and wellness. And in that conversation, that's where your primary care provider, in collaboration with yourself, can, really highlight some of those risk factors, some risk factors that you can mitigate, some that you cannot. However, they can give you avenues to try to lessen the risk.
Okay. Let's move on to treatment. And we'll continue to open the phone lines and the text line at 651-461-9226. So I guess the treatment option would be different for different women at different stages of a breast cancer diagnosis. Would that be accurate?
That is accurate, Susie.
And then what happens at different stages? Give us kind of a for example and what treatment might be out there and available.
For example, there would be the initial, if there was a lump that was either assessed during palpation by either the patient or woman, Miss Mann. There also could be during a breast exam, during an annual visit with your primary care provider. If there's one that's detected on mammography, in either of those instances, the next step would be to have that lump assessed by a biopsy. Biopsy usually then leads to where the tissue is examined by a pathologist. The pathologist would send a result. Now with current, most individuals are able to access their records electronically. If you haven't elected that electronic access with your organization that you're with, then usually you get a paper or letter of some sort, and so does your primary care provider.
Sure.
in those results, it would, let you know if it's benign or you actually have some instances where they show that you're positive for cancer. And in that's where then your primary care provider will highly likely have you see an oncologist at that time, and you and the oncologist would make a shared decision in what the next step would be. And the key part would be shared decision. Mm-hmm. And, you would, they would give you what the cancer is, what the treatments are. Is it palliative, meaning that it's not curative, and this is just to help prolong some of your life, but yeah. The expectancy is not where you're likely to survive that. If there is a high survival rate, that may indicate another pathway. It may lead to surgery to try to resect the cancerous tissue, right. Radiation, chemo, things of that nature.
And what new technology, what new methodology is being used to treat breast cancer? Is it immunotherapy?
Yes.
Or hormonal therapy? A friend of mine has stage 4 cancer, breast cancer, and she's mm-hmm. doing some kind of new clinical trial with different medications.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious what's on the edge, on the leading edge when it comes to treating breast cancer.
Well,
patients.
You highlighted a really good point, and I'm glad you raised that, Susie.
And we are back with the last half of our health hour. I'm Susie Jones, Charlie Weiss at the helm. Dr. Miriam Robby, Hennepin Healthcare, on our newsline. We're at 651-461-9226. If you have a question, you can call or you can text us, and we'll relay the question to the doctor. We'll do a few more text questions, doctor, and then I want to ask a little bit more about treatment and how far we've come in terms of treatment. Let's say, is there any correlation between breast and prostate cancer in the same family, she wonders.
Mm. Yes. So, and thank you actually for highlighting that question, because we leave our men out a lot in this. And, there is a correlation. Men are at risk for breast cancer as well. They have breast tissue, and it is very important that men get screened just as much as women do. They're not able to do the same type of screening when it comes to prostate. However, they also can, do breast self-exams as far as, checking the tissue for any lumps, bumps, tenderness, or looking for discharge.
Because this texter writes that her daughter just finished radiation and her son is scheduled for prostate surgery. Both are in their 50s. So, is the cancer... Is there some genetic connection between the cancers? But I don't know that.
We don't know. Yeah. However, okay. The likelihood could be high. Again, it's okay. The collaboration with your primary care provider, having those history discussions, and potentially looking for that gene.
Sure. Good morning. This texter writes, does menopause have any connection to getting breast cancer? Love the show. She writes, thank you.
Yes. So thank you for that. Menopause can raise the risk for breast cancer, especially if you're taking hormones such as estrogen or progesterone to try to help alleviate some of the symptoms that's correlated with menopause. Also, certain oral contraceptives have also been found to raise the breast cancer risk. So to the caller, yes, there is a correlation with that as well.
Texter writes, if the woman in a man's family have a history of breast cancer, does that increase his odds of getting breast cancer?
It's this same connection
sure.
with the genetic. So when you, and I strongly suggest, this is a strong collaboration with your primary care team. You know, when you have these annual discussions slash exams, this is where you have that discussion about your familial history, your mm-hmm. reproductive history, you know, your overall health and wellness. And in that conversation, that's where your primary care provider, in collaboration with yourself, can, you know, really highlight some of those risk factors, some risk factors that you can mitigate, some that you cannot. However, they can give you avenues to try to lessen the risk.
Okay. Let's move on to treatment. And we'll continue to open the phone lines and the text line at 651-461-9226. So I guess the treatment option would be different for different women at different stages of a breast cancer diagnosis. Would that be accurate?
That is accurate, Susie.
And then what happens at different stages? Give us kind of a for example and what treatment might be out there and available.
For example, you know, there would be the initial, if there was a lump that was either assessed during palpation by either the, you know, the patient or woman, Miss Mann. There also could be during a breast exam, during an annual visit with your primary care provider. If there's one that's detected on mammography, in either of those instances, the next step would be to have that lump assessed by a biopsy. Biopsy usually then leads to where the tissue is examined by a pathologist. The pathologist would send a result. Now with current, most individuals are able to access their records electronically. If you haven't elected that electronic access with your organization that you're with, then usually you get a paper or letter of some sort, and so does your primary care provider.
Sure.
In those results, it would, let you know if it's benign or you actually have some instances where they show that you're positive for cancer. And in that, that's where then your primary care provider will highly likely have you see an oncologist at that time, and you and the oncologist would make a shared decision in what the next step would be. And the key part would be shared decision. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you would, they would give you what the cancer is, what the treatments are. Is it palliative, meaning that it's not curative, and this is just to help prolong some of your life, but
yeah,
the expectancy is not where you're likely to survive that. If there is a high survival rate, that may indicate another pathway. It may lead to surgery to try to resect the cancerous tissue,
right,
radiation, chemo, things of that nature.
And what new technology, what new methodology is being used to treat breast cancer? Is it immunotherapy?
Yes.
Or hormonal therapy? A friend of mine has stage 4 cancer, breast cancer, and she's
mm-hmm.
doing some kind of new clinical trial with different medications.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious what's on the edge, on the leading edge when it comes to treating breast cancer.
Well,
patients.
You highlighted a really good point, and I'm glad you raised that, Susie. You know, we are continuously undergoing research to try to find better ways to cure cancer. And having individuals participate in research is pivotal, paramount. I cannot highlight that enough. And it's involving in research in all ethnic backgrounds. And I know that there's some concerns and even trust that has, you know, plagued certain ethnic backgrounds, you mm-hmm. know, with the, you know, as far as different things. But, you know, I'd like to say that we have added more equity approaches to research, more transparency to research, so that we can find different treatment routes. But to go back to your original question, you know, with the individual that you mentioned having stage four, and you know, is the different research, is it for palliative, as I mentioned, versus curative? Not having the background really can't say exactly to what she's doing, but how do we know that what she's receiving isn't something that may benefit either her or someone else in the future? Mm. That's what the whole indication with research is all about.
All right, 651-461-9226. If you had breast cancer 7 years ago and now show high levels of calcium in your blood, should you be concerned about cancer reoccurring? Thank you. And that's from a texter a few minutes ago.
Very good question. You know, there calcium could be is one of those electrolytes that could indicate that, and that goes back to the same context where you would have that steady follow up with your primary care and or oncologist, if you're seeing one at that time. They would indicate when you should be seen. You may be seen sooner than others who may not fit the same parameters that you're in. And they would have that where they would monitor the trend over a certain period of time. If the certain level gets to a point that they're concerned, then they would take the next step again in screening again for that.
651-461-9226. We'll do this one and then take our last break. Do silicone breast implants increase your risk of breast cancer? And how long should I get mammograms? I'm 66. We answered that, but let's answer it again for her, and let's talk about the breast implants, because I know that a lot of women have that question as well.
Yes. So at the age of 66, we would still recommend that you continue to be screened up to the age of 74. And definitely that would be a partnership with your primary care team as often. It could be 1 to 2 years, depending on what has been seen over time. Getting back to your question about having the augmentation, it can, it's a possibility that you could have a higher risk of having breast cancer with that. However, you know, if you're being screened at the rate that you and your primary care team has designated, and in that you have not seen any changes or your team hasn't seen any changes, for you personally, like the likelihood is that you won't develop that. However, we can never say never.
Okay, very good. It is 7:46 on a Sunday morning on Mother's Day. We're happy to have you with us. If you're listening right now, we're talking to Dr. Miriam Robbie at Hennepin Healthcare about breast cancer. And we invite your calls at 651-461-9226 or your texts. We'll be back right after this. And we're back. It is 10 minutes before 8 o'clock, 7:50 on a beautiful Sunday, a beautiful Sunday morning. I'm happy to have you with us. My name is Susie Jones. Charlie Weiss is our studio coordinator extraordinaire. I tried to mesh those words together. Dr. Miriam Robbie is our guest, Hennepin Healthcare. We're talking about breast cancer. It's a big weekend. The Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure took place this weekend. Lots going on, and we want to invite you to be part of the show as well at 651-461-9226. Dr. Robbie, a texter writes a short time ago, I am turning 65 next month. I have a family history of breast cancer, my mother and sister. My primary care doctor said this year at 65 will be the last time I need to have a mammogram. I am very well endowed. I have dense breasts. I do not feel comfortable with that answer. Should I continue to get a mammogram? 2 years ago, I had a scare of a lump, which was fat tissue. I'm 5'3", 150 pounds, and a 36 double D. Your response to that question.
So, with that, we strongly go again with the USPSTF current recommendation that all women get screened up to the age of 74. Not trying to challenge your primary care provider's conversation. But what I hear is that you want a little bit more participation in that shared decision with your primary care provider. And in that, you know, what I would suggest is to have that conversation with your primary care provider to say exactly what you just highlighted in your conversation today, the scare, your dense breasts, the familial history, and that you want to continue to have that screening, and so that you will be supported in the decision as far as what is your next approach in health and wellness. So continue to have that conversation with your primary care provider, and there's nothing wrong with advocating for yourself. You should always be a number one participant in your care. So if you have those concerns, make sure to raise them.
You know, along that line, I want to talk just a little more about that. What if that, what if you have an old doctor or someone and they're sort of resisting what your wishes are? I guess you really have to be your own best advocate and say, no, I'm sorry. This is what I've heard, or get a different doctor. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's your body overall, right? And you hit the nail on the head there again, Susie, with the being your own personal advocate. You know yourself best, and if there is a concern, or if you're feeling that you are having some challenges in the conversations, there's nothing wrong with, having a second opinion.
Sure.
I strongly, if you've had the primary care provider long term, it's always beneficial to try to have a continuum.
Yeah.
Going to different providers doesn't help either, because this is somebody new that doesn't know your history,
right.
The background, and they've assessed you and they know your body just as well as you do. So
right.
It's always the suggestion to continue to try to partner with your primary care provider. So I would strongly still suggest to have that conversation with them, but there's nothing wrong again with having a second opinion if you need be.
It's funny, because when I got my lung cancer diagnosis, my mom is a huge advocate of getting a second opinion, and she's a huge advocate of the Mayo Clinic. And so, but I felt guilty. I said to this oncologist, kind of like, oh, I'm sorry, but my mom wants me to get a second opinion. And you do have to kind of have a strong backbone and say, I'm going to do this, and I don't mind if I hurt someone's feelings. And, anyway, so we have 2 minutes, so let's try to get one more in. Is there a relationship between aluminum-based anti-deodorant, and cancer? Because I've heard that, too. That was sort of in the news, different kinds of deodorant, and we have about 2 minutes.
Right, yeah. There's been different, things raised, in the news and, in regards to that, can we say a direct correlation? It's always hard to say a direct correlation. However, as we continue to do research, maybe further down the line, there may be something that, indicates that that's the case. if you're concerned, you know, there are those natural-based products out there.
Right.
You know, same context, Susie, as you mentioned, with advocating for yourself. There's nothing wrong with, you know, altering that, you know, to do natural-based because you're concerned about that, because you have the family history,
yeah,
and you just don't want to raise that risk.
Okay, very good. Well, we appreciate your time. Any final thoughts here?
Final thoughts. You know, what I just want to thank everyone who's listened, everyone who participated with their great questions. You know, what Hennepin Healthcare and all organizations, we believe that there's a role for individual risk assessment and shared decision making in breast cancer screening. Given mammography is the best screening, we feel that all women, different ethnic backgrounds, should make sure to get that screening, and we hope to partner in that care at Hennepin Healthcare.
Okay, great. Thanks for coming on with us. We really appreciate it. Dr. Miriam Robbie, Hennepin Healthcare, on a Sunday morning on Mother's Day. Hope you're having a good one so far. We'll be back with more on WCCO. Right after this. And we're back. It is 10 minutes before 8 o'clock, 7:50 on a beautiful Sunday, a beautiful Sunday morning. I'm happy to have you with us. My name is Susie Jones. Charlie Weiss is our studio coordinator extraordinaire. I tried to mesh those words together. Dr. Miriam Robbie is our guest, Hennepin Healthcare. We're talking about breast cancer. It's a big weekend. The Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure took place this weekend. Lots going on, and we want to invite you to be part of the show as well at 651-461-9226. Dr. Robbie, a texter writes a short time ago, I am turning 65 next month. I have a family history of breast cancer, my mother and sister. My primary care doctor said this year at 65 will be the last time I need to have a mammogram. I am very well endowed. I have dense breasts. I do not feel comfortable with that answer. Should I continue to get a mammogram? 2 years ago, I had a scare of a lump, which was fat tissue. I'm 5'3", 150 pounds, and a 36 double D. Your response to that question.
So, with that, we strongly go again with the USPSTF's current recommendation that all women get screened up to the age of 74. Not trying to, challenge your primary care provider's conversation. But what I hear is that you want a little bit more participation in that shared decision with your primary care provider. And in that, you know, what I would suggest is to have that conversation with your primary care provider to say exactly what you just highlighted in your conversation today, the scare, your dense breasts, the familial history, and that you want to continue to have that screening, and so that you will be supported in the decision as far as what is your next approach in health and wellness. So continue to have that conversation with your primary care provider, and there's nothing wrong with advocating for yourself. You should always be a number one participant in your care. So if you have those concerns, make sure to raise them.
You know, along that line, I want to talk just a little more about that. What if that, what if you have an old doctor or someone and they're sort of resisting what your wishes are? I guess you really have to be your own best advocate and say, no, I'm sorry. This is what I've heard, or get a different doctor. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's your body overall, right? And you hit the nail on the head there again, Susie, with the being your own personal advocate. You know yourself best. And if there is a concern, or if you're feeling that you are having some challenges in the conversations, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, having a second opinion.
Sure.
You know, I strongly, you know, if you've had the primary care provider long term, it's always beneficial to try to have a continuum.
Yeah.
You know, going to different providers doesn't help either, because this is somebody new that doesn't know your history,
right.
You know, the background, and, you know, they've assessed you and they know your body just as well as you do. So
right.
It's always the suggestion to continue to try to partner with your primary care provider. So, you know, I would strongly still suggest to have that conversation with them, but there's nothing wrong, again, with having a second opinion if you need be.
You know, it's funny, because when I got my lung cancer diagnosis, my mom is a huge advocate of getting a second opinion, and she's a huge advocate of the Mayo Clinic. And so, but I felt guilty. You know, I said to this oncologist, you know, kind of like, oh, I'm sorry, but my mom wants me to get a second opinion. And you know, you do have to kind of have a strong backbone and say, I'm going to do this, and I don't mind if I hurt someone's feelings. And, you know, anyway, so we have 2 minutes, so let's try to get one more in. Is there a relationship between aluminum-based anti-deodorant, rather, and cancer? Because I've heard that, too. That was sort of in the news, different kinds of deodorant, and we have about 2 minutes.
Right, yeah. There's been different, you know, things raised, you know, in the news and, you know, in regards to that.
Okay.
You know, can we say a direct correlation? It's always hard to say a direct correlation. However, you know, as we continue to do research, you know, maybe further down the line, there may be something that, you know, indicates that that's the case. If you're concerned, you know, there are those natural-based products out there.
Right.
You know, same context, Susie, as you mentioned, with advocating for yourself. There's nothing wrong with, you know, altering that, you know, to do natural-based because you're concerned about that, because you have the family history,
yeah.
and you just don't want to raise that risk.
Okay, very good. Well, we appreciate your time. Any final thoughts here?
Final thoughts, you know, what I just want to thank everyone who's listened, everyone who participated with their great questions. You know, what Hennepin Healthcare and all organizations, we believe that there's a role for individual risk assessment and shared decision making in breast cancer screening. Given mammography is the best screening, we feel that all women, different ethnic backgrounds, should make sure to get that screening. And we hope to partner in that care at Hennepin Healthcare.
Okay, great. Thanks for coming on with us. We really appreciate it. Dr. Miriam Robbie, Hennepin Healthcare, on a Sunday morning on Mother's Day. Hope you're having a good one so far. We'll be back with more on WCCO.